Today on the Cloud Native Show, we're in Building 99, and I'm gonna go find Steve Lasker and talk to him about container registries and find out why they're important for cloud native apps. Let's go have a chat. I am wondering about registries and why they're important for cloud native apps.
Cool. I think about registries, we kind of, if you look back to what we used to do with VMs, right? VMs circa 2000, 20 some odd years ago. When you try to instance a VM, like what's the first thing you struggled with? Where do you actually get the VM image from? Do you have to copy it across the network? Do you stick it in a USB key? It's so big, how do I get it there? And how do I share them and all of that? So one of the things that Docker did really well is they thought about the whole end-to-end experience. And they thought about, great, I've got all this concept of images that I want to run, but where do I get them from? Mm. So they built this registry concept as well as part of it. And it's a concept that allows me to pull things with a content addressable URL. And it has some other details around layers and deltas that we've seen, of course.
Right.
But if you think about it, the first thing you kind of do when you learn Docker is Docker run hello world. Hello world actually is a kind of a shortcut. So what the Docker client does is it sticks docker.io/hello world in front of it.
Right.
So when you're saying Docker run hello world, the first thing the client does is say, oh, I don't have it here locally. Let me go get it and bring it down. And then once I have it, then it can run it. So that concept of that usability of being able to pull things from a location, and with Docker they have a default location for Docker Hub, is a pretty fundamental piece to that simplicity. So once you have a registry, then, well, now it eases all my deployments, because if I'm trying to deploy something, I can tell it run this thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, run n copies of it, right?
Right.
And in something like Kubernetes or orchestrations, it says run n copies. Like, all right, I'll figure out where to run it, and then it can tell any one of those nodes, run this thing, and it's got the address and it goes, oh, I don't have this thing. Let me go get the thing, pull it, and then I can run it. Really central to the whole deployment.
So would you say that the analogies for people who might have never seen a registry before, yeah, or used Docker before, it's much like source code, right? So before, if I was kind of using where you started with, before we had code repositories, I had code on a share, I had code on my file and say, Steve wants to use my code, great, let me put it on a disk and hand it to you. But now we have things like GitHub and private repositories of code. And if you want to get it, I just do git pull. Now I know where to pull it from, and we are assuming that first address is, github.com/blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I would say probably similar in that regard, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when it comes to these registries, how do you choose a registry to use? You had mentioned Docker Hub as a registry. Obviously, I know that that's a public registry.
Right.
But how do I know that that's the right place to put my code? Because maybe I don't want to share my image that I'm creating to a public registry that any Joe public can pull. How do I make a right choice?
Yeah, so if you think about images, the source code is fairly lightweight, right? It's small in volume. So you're not as worried about how long it takes to come across a network. And without getting debates of the DevOps and GitOps kind of thing, generally speaking, code is not part of your production deployment, right? You kind of stage that and it goes. With registries, they are a production asset. The images can be large, so you want to have them authenticated with something that makes sense for your company. So in that sense, you always want the registry to be as close to your deployment as possible and under the control of your company. So Docker Hub is great for pushing public images for others to download, certainly base images that I might build from. But I wouldn't ever run a production environment from Docker Hub or Quay. Or honestly, if you're another customer running it from ACR, like that's a place to get them from if you're getting them from our public repos. Mm-hmm. So if you're in Azure, of course, we recommend using Azure Container Registry. If you're in AWS, use ECR, Google GCR. And you always want the registry as close to your deployment as possible.
Okay.
And then that's the other reason why we've added the feature we call geo-replication is, you know, you might be running in multiple regions. You might be in the US, you might be in Europe, you might be in Asia. You can, with the click of a button, you know, click on a map, is have your registry be in both East US and, you know, South Japan or whatever you want.
Right.
And now, as I push to a registry in one region, we on the back end will geo-replicate all the layers. We'll figure out, does that layer already exist? Oh, it's just the top one you need. We'll push it to that additional region. And then in that region, we'll fire a regional webhook and says, oh, you know, what did I say, Southeast Asia, whatever it was, that says, oh, there's a image that just arrived in this region, and now you can do your deployment based on that event program.
So let me back up a little bit. You talked about close to your deployment. Obviously, in any cloud environment, I'm going to pick where to deploy my app. And let's say I'm in West US, because right now we're in Redmond. And I deploy my app in the West US. If I use a public registry, regardless of who it is, I'm not really sure where I'm deploying my images. So I might get some latency, is what you're saying. And if I use an Azure Container Registry, if I'm deploying in Azure, I might want to put my container registry in the same location.
Right.
What are the other benefits of me just being close? I'm not going to get that latency. What are some of the other benefits of me just being kind of right next to my deployment?
Yeah, so latency is certainly important. Reliability, you know, you're not traveling over the public internet if you're using something in that data center.
Mm-hmm.
You're under your own auth control. Like, you know, if you're using Docker Hub, you're using the Docker Hub auth. If that person leaves the company, they still have that, right? There's no way to revoke that token. Or that credential.
Okay.
So those are important parts about where to have it. Obviously within each registry, there are different additional capabilities. You know, that there's a part of commoditization that we do in registries, so that your Docker pull and push works no matter where you are and what cloud. But then there's things that we can add that, you know, provide some extra value. So within ACR, we have geo-replication as one. We do content signing. We support the Docker Content Trust model to pull your images and make sure that it's the same content from where it pulled from. We have VNets, so now you can put, you know, a lot of people get into choices of, I don't want the public endpoint, so I wind up having to run my own private registry. And running a private registry is, you know, there's a lot there. Like, there's a reason why you have so many people running ACR service for the reliability and
you say running a private registry, like for me, if I was a, you know, ABC company, running it on-prem, trying to manage that whole thing.
On-prem or even in, you know, inside of a cloud. You know, up until we had VNet support, we had customers having to stand up their own instance of Docker distribution or a vendor's product.
Okay.
Because it was the only way they can get it limited to their own VNet. So now with ACR, we support putting the ACR endpoint into a VNet, and now it's locked out from anybody else.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
So there's some, you know, security benefits you would have as well. And that's also part of your point of, you know, being local to that region. And you can set up, you know, different regions for different VNets and so forth.
How do you think about the lifecycle management of, you know, building my containers and pushing them to the registry and then getting that to, you know, kind of the next step and build and that whole kind of inner loop? I've used ACR, I have my own instance, and I think sometimes I take for granted some of the things that it's doing. You know, I will blindly do a push to, you know, build that in my ACR, and I go, awesome, now it's out there. Kind of what's happening under the covers a little bit to, you know, help me understand, kind of, what is that build task doing?
Yeah.
And what is it doing when I'm not thinking about it? I mean, security patching and stuff like that. So what's that lifecycle look like?
Yeah, so there's, lifecycle is a pretty broad area. So if we think about it, there's the time that I'm committing my code, or the time I'm inner loop, like as you said, I'm just executing my code locally. I'm not ready for anybody to see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, want to make sure I'm comfortable with it. So in that case, you can either do a Docker build locally, if you have got the Docker client working. What we also do is, you know, you're seeing a lot of shift that we support these build environments in the cloud,
right?
Where it'll be more consistent, you know, because the daemon, you know, we have the whole what's it works on my machine kind of scenario.
Sure.
Well, which version do you have on your local machine? And, you know, there are variances there. So if you are doing a cloud build, then we want to be able to provide that the same way you're doing it during your build process is the same way I can do in the inner loop. So the same way you can type Docker build, you can say AZACR build. And we will take your local directory, send it up to the cloud, and then do an isolated build just of that. So you get the same streaming logs and the whole bit.
And I don't have to have Docker on my machine
not
to do
all.
That. It all executes in the cloud.
Yep.
Okay.
It does the exact same model except execute. I mean, if you think about it, when a Docker build works locally, it's actually sending it to another instance on your machine, right? There's another VM running. So all we're doing is remoting that VM into the cloud, but we don't use the Docker client for that because we wanted to alleviate that dependency for people having to do builds locally. We've had scenarios where people are working themselves, you know, in a remote island or someplace, and that base image, they don't want to have to pull to a local laptop. They can just push it into Azure and we'll do the pull on the server side.
Oh, okay.
So that's the inner loop part. But if we think of lifecycle management, you have everything from the time where they're actually committing code, making changes, and you're doing the test and pushing it out to production. Mm-hmm. And every time you do a code commit and that build triggers, your Docker file is, says, you know, from, you know, image. And it will go and get, you know, the latest version of that tag, right? That's
right.
Part of the default experience. So you're always getting, the, in theory, the patched version of that tag. Now, what happens when you stop doing code commits?
Yeah.
How are you going to patch these things?
Like,
I'm
in production, everything seems to be happy, and I don't know, there's a security vulnerability that happens. Like, do you handle that for me?
Yeah.
I guess.
So think about what we do with the VMs, right? In the VM world, we're throwing the code over the wall. Somebody else is patching the VMs, we hope.
Yeah.
And we hope that the code continues to run.
Sure.
And every company has been through a situation at some point where that patch didn't actually, that it broke, and it
right.
could be pretty catastrophic. In the VM model, it's pretty difficult to instance a VM in a test environment, test everything
sure.
before you roll it out. Not that people can't, right? You can brute force these things. It's just the technology wasn't built for it. You know, VMs were built for running forever. Right, the metric there was how long will the VM run before it fails. In the container world, we've designed things around, we assume failure is going to happen.
Mm.
We assume multiples are going to be running at the same time. We assume scaling will happen. So our code patterns followed that as well. In the VM world, we wrote code assuming it would run, and if it failed, it was an exception.
Sure.
In the container world, in the cloud native development world, we're writing code that assume failures happen and assume multiples are running. So that alleviates a lot of interesting possibilities. So in the VM world, instead of having to patch a machine, we can just rebuild our code. And if you think about it, what would it mean to actually patch a running container?
Yeah.
Right? So I have all these containers running of the same image. I've got five of them running, let's say. And I go and I have some daemon that goes, oh, let me automatically patch this. And if it has to reboot, it'll shut the container down. When the container has to start back up, the orchestrator might say, oh, I don't have enough capacity, let me put it over there.
Right.
And when it goes over there, it goes, oh, I've got to run this image, let me go pull it from the registry, which isn't the patched version, and you kind of get in this cyclical cycle. So the whole idea is we want to patch the image and then have it redeployed. Now, if I'm patching an image, so the same way a Git commit would trigger a build, what if your base image, the thing you've referenced, can trigger the build?
Sure.
So it's just another trigger, is the way we think about it.
Okay.
So with ACR tasks, what we've done, and ACR tasks is this, you know, other service that we put alongside ACR, and it is the cloud build environment, right, that you can say AZ ACR build. And what you do is if you tell it to do the build, as we've done the build, we look at the from statement, all the images that you referenced, and we'll take that tag, we'll take the digest of it, and we will monitor that digest, or that tag and digest. And we'll do that for anything that's done with tasks. And you can, so the simplicity is fairly straightforward, right? It's the scale that makes it impressive.
Sure.
So we have, you know, hundreds of thousands to millions of builds that we're handling that are set up. We're not setting up 100,000, you know, million monitors for each of those. We have one for the Node 9 image, for the .NET Core image. And then we track, here's the 10,000 builds, the definitions that are made for it. So as soon as that Node 9 image gets updated, we'll trigger those.
When you say that you're going to trigger a new build, and let's say it's an Nginx image, base image that I've got, you know, for my .NET Core app,
right?
And I've got it deployed on, you know, Kubernetes, you know, running 20 pods or something crazy like that. And you say, okay, we've got a new vulnerability in Nginx, and we need to rebuild that image. And you say you're going to run a build. When you build that, are you building just the Nginx layer, or are you building my image and running my test that I have built into that thing. Like, when you say build, what exactly are we kind of running through to? Because, like you said, it runs through the build, and it might continually fail. And then I go, I need to scale. Right. Now I need to pull that image, and now I have a failure somewhere. How do I get a comfort level that when I go to pull that image, I'm feeling good about what's gonna happen?
There's a lot of pieces to that puzzle.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of practices that could put in there. There's some technology, there's some practices that you would put in place. So first of all, you should never update a tag.
Right? Okay.
Tags should be immutable for deployed apps.
Sure.
So I know exactly what I'm deploying. I have versions that I deploy. Which is different advice than what you give for base images. So base images, you want what I refer to as stable tags, because I want to know this is the node 9.1 image, and that has a certain promise of functionality. So you are going to have a from node 9.1 or .NET Core or whatever, and the owners of that image will maintain that. So if there's a serviceability event that they have to deal with node 9.1, they will update the node 9.1 tag.
Okay.
And then the task will see that. It will trigger a build, just like your code commit did. And so the build will start running. It'll pull the same Git digest that it was before, or you could even stash your binaries.
Sure.
There's a couple different ways to do this, because you don't necessarily want your code to flow forward just because patching happened, right? You want the same functionality. So the build triggers, and then your unit and functional tests would kick in as well.
Okay.
So I'll come back to that, actually.
Yeah.
So your unit and functional tests kick in, and as long as that is successful, then it rolls out a deployment. But to your point, it's rolling out a deployment of a new tag.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling your orchestrator, hey, I want version ABC23,
right.
You know, versus 2.2 or whatever it was before. And that blue, green, red, yellow, whatever it is you're trying to do
sure.
for your deployment strategy of the day will just be continual. The beauty of this whole thing is if you followed all these pieces, everything from your code needs to be able to survive, you know, being changed,
yeah, sure.
right? So that's important, to the ability to roll out and have them scale, is think about the unit and functional tests, right? When people are doing unit and functional tests, is like the dreaded piece. Like there's somebody that's doing it, you know, because people enjoy doing it because it's actually a pretty fun task to
right.
see it. But your reward on investment for tests is what? You know, it's like when the coding is done, I don't really have need for it anymore. So, you know, we want to be able to leverage those tests. And, you know, today we don't think about leveraging those because you get to the end of development, I stop writing tests because I'm not worrying about it anymore.
Right.
If you're leveraging your tests for the life of the app, for hopefully, you know, dozens of years, maybe, then there's value in doing that test.
Sure.
So now people will start doing tests, and you're basically just going to run your CI/CD pipeline for the life of the app. The only difference is instead of code commits going in, your base image updates are triggering that.
And it sounds like if we have all of that in place, we're doing the code right, doing the deployments right, we're doing our testing right, all this should work good as long as we're following the best practices.
Right. So now, it might fail. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Things that will fail, but the difference is it will fail before deployment, we hope.
Sure.
And maybe it's just a test failure, but do you want your things deployed, you know, that we don't, you know, do you want your patches applied where we don't know if it's going to stay running?
Sure.
Or do you want to figure that out beforehand?
Cool.
So you at least get more insight. And you could decide, hey, the test failed, but I'm going to deploy it anyway.
Mm.
That's an option for you to do. And then you're no worse than you were before.
Right.
But at least you have some visibility.
Cool. So what's coming next? What's next on the roadmap for us?
Yeah, so there's two things, two categories. One, what are customers asking us for? So if we look at our user voice, auto purge, repo level permissions, vulnerability scanning built in, audit logs, and service principles making them easier to use. We're going to use tokens for that for massive scale, all coming out. That's the core thing what customers are asking us for.
Cool.
The other part that we've seen is we've got these registries set up from secure pipelines from end to end, from VNets and signing and everything. Why is it only images can be put into that? You know, the OCI image format or distribution format can handle anything. We can now store Helm charts, singularity images, whatever it is that you want to put in there, we can store in the registry and you can distribute the same way you're distributing your images.
Cool. Lots of stuff going on then.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's a lot of fun space.
Cool. I appreciate you taking the time and showing me kind of what's here and more about ACR than I already knew. So I'm looking forward to jumping in and storing some more things in the registries.
Sounds
cool.
Great.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, that's been another episode of the Cloud Native Show. Be sure to check out aka.ms/cloudnativeshow for future shows. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for watching the Cloud Native Show. Be sure to subscribe, watch for a future episode, and especially our streaming shows on Twitch, where we build apps based on the conversations had right here. We'll see you next time.